Now, if you're clever and you use social engineering techniques, which, by the way, the police are much, much better at social engineering than almost any of the crooks. But crooks are good at social engineering, right? They learn that because, you know, it's social engineering to get old people to send you money. It's social engineering to get people to buy things that they don't actually need. That's part of the technique. So it's just the nature of that game. Another one is to avoid the system by using other means. Right? So maybe, there are encrypted messages, but you find out the other party for the encrypted messages and you get the key from them. Maybe they didn't know it was a crime. Maybe they don't want to be included in this crime. Maybe you said you tried to get them to kill your wife, and they said no. And yes, they are anxious for the police to find out that they said no. And they'll give you the crypto key. They'll show you the messages. Another example would be that the messages are encrypted in transmission, but the original files are still stored on the computer, not overwritten. Or a draft copy was there. They sent copy 2, and the draft copy 1 is still on the disk. Basically, what you do for strategies for steganography is very similar. Another thing is a lot of crypto systems are not as good as they may be put up to be. So you might go to www.accessdata.com. This is a location where they'll sell you products ranging from $750 to $1,500 that will help you to find, for example, decrypt stuff that's put in Microsoft Access, get past the access codes. Generally, these are only going to be available to law enforcement. You might search the web for data on cryptography. Go after the keys, not the messages. Get people to reveal the keys by having them use the keys. Right? You might put a tap on their keyboard so that whatever they type gets sent in there, and observe them for a while. So you might have a warrant that's not bust down the door, but go in when they're not there and plant a device to observe their behaviors. You might do experiments with keys. Guess easy passwords, break with big computing power. It's another way, guessing large numbers of keys. Steganography, this is an example here. It says, sure, you can hide one message in the characters of another message, and the S in sure, and the E in hide, and the C in characteristics, and the R in another, and E in message, and T in text are all capitalized. So if you read it, it says S-E-C-R-E-T, and that's secret. That's the secret. We found the secret in that message. That's an example of steganography. And there are lots of techniques that start with crypto systems and use that to vary the order of content of messages. So finding the secret message in this page isn't hard. Many free applications are available on the web for steganography, and of course you can use those applications very often to break the steganographic code as well as to make it. There are other problems associated with embedding and other data formats, and we've discussed them before. The recursive nature of information has to do with Turing's work that shows that a general purpose, a Turing machine is what we call it now, but a general purpose machine for computation can do anything any other computation machine can be. In fact, you can even implement it within itself. That's the recursive nature. So file systems can be put within file systems. You can have compression and other packaging technologies. And within those packaging technologies, you can have wrapping technologies, and you can have a system that wraps and unwraps these things one layer at a time. If you want to experience this, go into Linux with a loopback file system. That's a file that contains a whole file system. And inside it, create a loopback file system while that file system is mounted. So create a Mac file system within your DOS file system, within your Linux file system. And in that DOS file system, mount a loopback file system that has a Linux file system. And son of a gun, you can do it. You can build them as deep as you want, as long as you have enough loopback interfaces compiled in. Okay, so you can create file systems within file systems within file systems within file systems with encrypted, compressed, archived, and so forth. So and unwrapping them is one step at a time sort of deal. There's also an unlimited set of data formats available. Okay? I can, make my own data format by writing my program and storing things however I want them to be stored. So unraveling all the data formats to find the data is not always that easy. Fortunately, they're not all used. there are an unlimited number of them, but a very small subset are commonly used. And most criminals are not computer scientists. Right? Most criminals are just criminals. They're just using computers like everybody else in the world uses computers. They're not part of the crime. It's not a tool of the crime. It's an incidental data, evidence of the crime. So, there has to be some way that they're using to get at it. Right? Your average criminal is not going to go through 473 steps in order to get to their data that says where they're going at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Because it's too inconvenient, just like it's too inconvenient for anybody else to use this technology that well. So usually the way to get at it is pretty quick if you know what to do. So having an intelligence effort associated with this helps. Another thing, of course, is just looking through the system and finding all the data formats. So, for example, I've recently written a program that gets about 95 or 98% of all the data formats under Windows, under DOS, under Unix and Unix-like operating environments, and under Macintosh operating environment, just by looking at the files. It looks at them and it says, this looks like a C program. This looks like a Perl script. This is a JIP file. This is a JPEG file. This is a WAV file. It's a sound thing. So just identifying them by content rather than by name, because one of the very common hiding methods that people use is they'll rename a file. Right? They'll take a PowerPoint presentation and they'll call it .com or something. You have to rename it to open it up with PowerPoint, and it won't be seen as a PowerPoint presentation. But if you examine the content, you'll find out it looks like a PowerPoint presentation. So having automation to sever the data format is important. Also, you might the standard fare is just doesn't look right. If it's a PowerPoint file and it has the extension TXT for text file, that doesn't look right. They're trying to hide it. Mens rea. They tried to hide it. Right? They had intent. Find it, search it, win. Tracking over the internet. There are a lot of tracking programs that are coming available. Simplest ones from Unix and from Windows would be Traceroute, which traces the route from here to there, not from there to here. The route from there to here is not always the same as the route from here to there. Okay, and in fact, there are at least a couple of examples of things that you go and look up in the internet, which sort of go out into nowhere land, but if you come the other direction, they work. I have several of those. If you look up 204.7.229.1, the IP address, that used to be the address of all.net. And sometimes when you look that up, it tells you that's all.net. But if you look up all.net, all.net's some other IP address. And neither of those are the actual all.net. So the whole internet mechanism for finding and storing information about things is fundamentally flawed and is based on belief in things that are not really that credible. Oh, before I go on, I just want to mention, if you're looking about information on data embedding, which is what I was talking about, there's a book called Data Embedding for Information Assurance, which is, this is from the U.S. government agencies only. So you couldn't get this on the street. And so that's, it's a nice little green book. And take a brief look at that on the way around the room. Not that there's anything particularly important or secret in there. It's just that when the government does it and they think it's important for them, they want to make it seem like it's important for them by making it so not everybody else can get it, even though it doesn't have anything that everybody else doesn't already have and know. Who is another feature, NS lookup, name service lookup, and these are things that will go out and look in the internet databases to find information on sites or individuals. So you do that. Fine, we did an NS lookup, and we found that 204.7.229.1 is all.net. Fred Coney lives in Ohio somewhere. Now what do? You go look them up, and you start with phone calls and search warrants and do searches, and you try and track it all down. When you go to Ohio, say hi to my ex-neighbors, because I haven't lived there in almost 5 years now, and I just want to note that this information has a tendency to be not very reliable, not very new, but nevertheless, sometimes it works, maybe even the majority of the time. If you're trying to hide and know what you're doing technically, then it's very hard to find you. Then we have the issues of anonymity. And there are various, there's anonymity provided by anonymizers, and then there are forgeries. Anonymizers, there are web and other browsers that do anonymizing. There's anonymizer.com, and there's email-based anonymizers, and things called Mixmasters, and these issues. So Email anonymizers are services, you send them the email, they take off the email headers and send it forward. Of course, if you happen to have a signature line, it'll encrypt your signature line. So you don't want to send your signature line. If you go to Hotmail and get an account, that's fairly anonymous, except of course it's easy to track back with a search warrant. And if it's important, they may even give it to you anyway, and there are other means for searching them back. Mixmasters are designed by the people that think they want to provide others with privacy. What they're actually providing is criminals with the ability to get away with things, make it harder to find them. Not impossible, but harder to find them. So Mixmasters basically encrypt the traffic between anything in the Mixmaster set, and when you send your request in, it gets sent to multiple Mixmasters before actually getting sent out the other name, out the other end as a request. Please note that if you type a message and you have, for example, you mix your I's and E's, that'll be a characteristic of your typing that has nothing to do with the Mixmasters. They won't be able to keep it from being detected at the other end. So it might be able to obscure the source of the message to those that don't have the high financial investment in trying to unobscure that, but it doesn't obscure the content. And so very often we can trace you by content. We can do psychological profiling of the individuals who sent it, find out about their education, what part of what country they tend to have come from. You might be able to find out from specific things that they say, people they know, times that they are in particular places, and so on and so forth. So tracking people down is detective work. And of course, that's what being a detective is. So don't believe that these things make it impossible to track. They do not. They do make it more resource intensive, which means they have to be more important. Which probably means that low-level criminals get away with this stuff through these techniques, but really sophisticated criminals are worth tracking down.
Just related to
Yeah, all.net we have AnonySurf. It's anonymous surfing. It's anonymous, well, that is to say the people that you're making the request of don't get your information. That doesn't mean that I won't freely send that to law enforcement. There's nothing on my site that says, in fact, my site says our policy is, if you come here, we can do any damn thing we want with your information. That's it. That's what it says. It says it real clearly. It says not only we can, but we will, and we do. So if you use AnonySurf to go to somewhere through my site, and don't tell the world about this, but this is how it is. If you go somewhere and do something that I think is illegal, and I do watch these things, I'll forward your information to the police without a request, thank you. So don't do it. Also, of course, it doesn't obscure the content. So if you use AnonySurf to go to some porn site and your location is sniffing for porn sites, they may be able to pick up the pornography even though you went through an anonymizer. Okay, that won't help you. But there's a widespread perception that it will, so people do tend to use them. And then, of course, breaking anonymity in practice is not as difficult as it may seem in theory. For example, there was a server in Finland, I believe it was, that was providing anonymous email forwarding services. And in the case of the, I don't remember the name of the church, but there was a religious institution that they were leaking confidential information of the institution out about religious doctrine. And now, of course, this particular church, their religious doctrine is, let us say, on the far side from what you would consider the norm. Nonetheless, they claim to be a religious organization, and the United States government, I believe, recognizes them as such. So you're free to believe whatever you want in the United States, and that's a good thing, because I'm now free to believe anything I want to. So in this particular case, the anonymizing server in Finland, who claimed the anonymity for everything, what happened was there was a lawsuit. The church went to Finland and put up the law. Maybe it was the Netherlands. I think it was the Netherlands, which is a haven for anonymity. Went to the Netherlands, and they got a warrant to search it. And the question was, are we going to search your whole anonymous server to find the messages we're looking for, or are you going to tell us the identity? And the answer was, here's the identity. So once they got the search warrant, the identity was forthcoming. So believing that these anonymous services keep you anonymous is a mistake. It's wrong. It doesn't work. Under legal pressure, you can break these things. It was in the Netherlands, yes. Lawsuit resulted in a legal case that gave unlimited access. Forgery. most protocols don't prove any don't provide any technical safeguards effective against address or identity forgery. After all, you know, it's a computer protocol. How can a computer protocol tell you that I'm Fred? It can't. There's no way. There's no way to prove that I am who I claim to be. Password technology requires physical security in order to be effective. And even though we know that passwords are not the best way to do things, virtually every email service on the internet uses standard passwords. There's no encrypted, there's no secure shell tunnel to pick up your email. It doesn't exist here, it doesn't exist anywhere. Because ultimately the email servers don't work that way. And until they're rigged to work that way, that's a generic weakness. But so people can forge things like passwords in that mechanism. Encryption technology is increasingly a solution of choice, but it's not embedded into the infrastructure. So it only works to a very limited fashion. And remember, if I'm trying to find you, there are lots and lots and lots of ways to look. And all of your fancy encryption and hard work to make that safe is not effective if I just happen to use another method. It's very hard to be a good enough defender against a good enough attack. Other online resources. This particular pointer list comes from the high-tech computer crime mailing list. And it has bank source information, computer and web issues, consumer protection sites, criminal justice information, government websites, investigative resources, legal sources, and so forth, periodicals, military, search engines, and tools. And if you go to AllNet, CyberCop, pointers.html, that'll give you a fairly substantial list of online resources.